Are you still on the hunt for a good summer read, something you can really dig your teeth into? We have some suggestions for you from NPR's Petra Mayer, who joins us now. Petra, welcome.
Hi, happy to be here.
I mean, I have to ask this question every time we talk about summer reads, but what distinguishes a summer read from a not summer read?
Oh, dude, that's such a hard question, right? Because it depends on the reader. For me, a summer read is, and I'm going to be brutally honest with you here, a summer read is something that doesn't tax me too emotionally, right?
Yeah, that's kind of me too.
Yeah, like especially in summer, I love romance because, of course, the thing about romance is that you know that the roller coaster is always going to come to a safe stop and there will be a happy ending. So you feel okay about taking those ups and downs. So yeah, that's what I like in a summer read. But that, again, that might not be everybody.
It could just mean what you're reading in the summer, or a beach read is what you're reading
right.
At the beach, right?
Yeah, you know how they say, you know, a beach body is the body you go to the beach in?
Yeah,
a summer read is the book you read in the summer.
Okay, well then let's get started on your recommendations for summer reads or whenever you want to read them. The first book on your list is The Sweetness of Water from Nathan Harris. This has gotten a lot of attention. It's an Oprah Book Club pick. Also, it's a great title for when we're going through a heat wave.
It's also, I should say, President Obama picked it as his one of his well, summer reading books. So like I'm following in other people's footsteps on this. And normally when a book is this buzzy, especially a literary fiction novel, I kind of have to side eye it a little bit. But I mean, trust me when I say it sucked me in. It's set in a small town in the South. It's just after the end of the Civil War. They're under Union occupation and they're trying to figure out how to deal with this sudden influx of Black people who are now free, right? And of course, this is the South just after the Civil War. So there is a wide variety of reactions to what's going on. And it follows three sets of people. There's a farmer and his wife. There are two brothers who are Black and they have left a neighboring plantation and they are trying to make enough money to go north. And then there's a pair of Confederate soldiers. I'm not going to call it a love affair, but like they're definitely having a relationship and hiding it. This is a debut novel, but the writing is just, it's so strong and gorgeous and assured. And the characters have so many layers to them. Normally, I cannot deal with literary novels where like people speak in circles because they can't communicate properly. But
yeah.
These people, even when they were doing that, I just wanted to spend more time with them
nice.
And to see what else was revealed about them as the story went on.
Okay, I'm sold on that one. Not that I'm a tough audience, but still, let's get on to our next book. Also getting a lot of attention, and this is Razorblade Tears from S.A. Cosby. And we wanted to read a little bit of the description from Amazon, which says, a Black father, a white father, two murdered sons, a quest for vengeance, which sounds like the beginning of a, you know, a Netflix series or something. What's this book about?
Yeah, this is definitely a book that will like shoot you out of a cannon and never let up. So this is, if you like a good summer thriller, this is definitely one to check out. So it is about two fathers, one white, one Black. They've both served hard time in prison and it has changed them. And the link between them is that their sons fell in love and got married, which neither of them dealt with very well. They were both absent for a lot of years during, you know, the time their sons were growing up and neither of them particularly dealt well with having gay sons. And now these two sons have been murdered. So these men who never really met while their children were alive, and they're both just loaded down with scars and regrets and issues, and they sort of form this prickly, difficult bond, and they decide to hunt down the killers, right? Because the cops just aren't doing a great job about it. The thing that struck me when I was reading this book is it's kind of perfectly titled because it'll cut you up and it'll make you cry. It is violent. Like, that is something to consider when you're picking it up, but whew, it's a wild ride.
So listeners, not to worry, we have all of Petra's picks at hereandnow.org. So don't worry about taking notes right now. You can just listen and enjoy. In the meantime, Petra, we know that there has been a lot of effort in the publishing business and other places to bring more diverse storytelling to readers. On your list is a book that sounds like it's sort of part of that. It's Stone, Sword, Table, multiple retellings of the legend of King Arthur.
Yeah, it is absolutely part of that. I think if you read the introduction, it describes the editors, Swapna Krishna and Jen Northington, sort of saying to each other, so where are all the queer retellings? Where are the marginalized retellings? Where are the other voices retelling Arthurian legends? Mm. This is also like a great book. It's big, but if you don't want to sit down and rip through a whole book in one setting, you can kind of pick and choose these stories. They're set past, present, and future. And they take Arthurian legends and sort of retell them from all different kinds of perspectives in all different kinds of times and places. The initial story is one where Camelot coexists with a medieval North African empire called the Almohad Caliphate, and King Arthur summons a renowned Muslim judge to decide whether Guinevere has been unfaithful. Ooh. And then it goes like all the way through to a future with like Wiccan billionaires and reality TV stars reenacting Sir Gawain and the Green Knight on Mars.
So okay, that just sounds awesome. I'm sold on all of these.
Like, if I needed to sell you further, just some of the best writers working now are in this anthology. Like Danny Lavery, Ken Liu, Silvia Moreno-Garcia, all the people that are doing some of the most exciting and interesting work right now. There's even a romance, if you like romance, from Sarah McLean, who's one of the biggest romance authors around right now. It's about a female bladesmith and a mysterious warrior. There is, as my reviewer said, a seat for everyone at this round table.
It's a big table. This is Petra Mayer, so I know you have sci-fi on your list.
You know me.
Yes, I do. Pick one of them that you think you'd recommend.
So a book that I just read is Psalm for the Wild Built by Becky Chambers. And she just wrapped up a series called Wayfarers, which was the sort of four loosely connected books. And they're set in a far future where humans are kind of the like sad backwards newcomers to a big galactic confederation. And those are amazing, by the way. In fact, once I finished Psalm for the Wild Built, I went back and restarted those. The first one's called The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet. But the new series is called Monk and Robot, and it's more down to Earth. It's set on a world which I have not yet figured out is maybe a far future Earth, where humans and robots, like robots have become sentient, and the two groups have diverged so long ago that now they're just legends to each other. The robots, by the way, like have been reproducing themselves off in the woods by rebuilding new robots with old parts.
Because of course they have.
Yep. Of course they have. And this is a world where like, it's almost a utopia. There aren't a whole lot of material wants. And the main character is a monk who decides that they want to hear the sound of crickets, which are nearly extinct in this world. So they go off on this journey, and in the forest, they meet a robot. And it's like, what?
Because of course.
Neither of us knew the other existed. They're just legends, right? So they become sort of uneasy traveling buddies, and they go on this quest to find the sound of crickets. And it's like a lot of Becky Chambers books where there's not a huge dramatic story arc, but it's more like you're spending time with really fascinating people in a world that's so thoughtfully built that that's half the story right there. And there are definitely big ideas swimming around just under the surface. She's definitely like one of those writers that you feel smarter after reading.
I just feel like if you're reading a book about robots, they're going to become sentient. That's just sort of like, you know, in any case. You also have an essay collection on your list that you wanted to talk about. What makes this essay collection so good?
Yeah, this is Bring Your Baggage and Don't Pack Light by Helen Ellis. And she's so funny. This is another book that you could, it's an essay collection, so you can kind of pick and choose if you don't want to read a whole book. But I actually just tore through it in one sitting. Helen Ellis broke out a few years ago with a short story collection called American Housewife that kind of grew out of a Twitter account that she had called What I Do All Day. And it was sort of about what housewives do all day. But this is nonfiction. And this is Ellis a few years on from thinking about herself as a housewife. And she's getting close to 50, and she's writing about sort of the indignities of getting older and her bonds with her lifelong friends. And dare I say this word on the air, menopause.
you dare, and also you
her
dare
life,
say.
I dare. And also her life as a, she's a pretty serious poker player. Like, did you know she helped coach Colson Whitehead?
No. Holy yeah, cow. Colson Whitehead, yeah. Author of The Underground Railroad, among many other fabulous books.
And a pretty serious poker player. So this is a book with a lot of layers. And, you know, I'm not quite part of the demographic that she's writing about, but, you know, give it a few years. And there's just this one scene where she's having a hot flash at the deli counter and she's fanning herself with a package of ham. I was like, man, when I get to that point, if I can give as few F words as she does, it's all going to be okay.
I mean, who hasn't been there? we've been getting book picks from NPR's Petra Mayer, and we'll have a list of all of those picks at hereandnow.org. Petra, it's always a delight. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.